welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a Cinemalinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinemalinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at EverythingCanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Liz Broswell all about her brand new book, Stuffed Into Darkness. You might know Liz from her A Twisted Tale books, where this September she releases her seventh book in that series, What Once Was Mine, but she's returned to the world of Stuffies with Into Darkness, which picks things up 1 year after the events in the first book, Stuffed. Yes, Clark and Foon are both a year older, but are they a year wiser? Stuffed is one of those series, while meant for kids, has a ton of crossover appeal as it explores themes that adults can certainly relate to, whether you're looking for that fountain of youth or not. We talk about all sorts of things, including A Twisted Tale books, her personal history with Stuffies, Stuffed Into Darkness, of course, and a whole lot more. While this is mostly a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, you know, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, if we ever do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices, and this should be done all year long. And normally I'll speak to the tragedy of the day, but there's just so many right now, it feels a little overwhelming. All I'll say is that my heart breaks for anyone who's lost a family member or a friend through no fault of their own, whether it be from mass shooting or a police killing. We're so far past reform at this point, it seems laughable, but it's crystal clear massive change needs to happen at all levels, and that includes accountability. One way to cope, for me anyways, is to find moments of joy, and I've wanted to speak with this guest for quite a while. Liz Broswell spent her childhood reading fairy tales, catching frogs, and going on adventures in the woods with her stuffed animals. That last point is key. She has a degree in Egyptology from Brown University. After making video games for 10 years, Liz now writes full-time and plays video games just for fun. She has written books such as Snow, RX, and The Nine Lives of Chloe King. I first heard of her actually thanks to her ever-growing list of Disney titles, namely her contribution to the A Twisted Tale books, where this September she releases her seventh book in that series, What Once Was Mine. If you don't know, A Twisted Tale is sort of Disney's version of Marvel's What If, where authors such as Liz look at classic Disney tales from a different point of view. She lives in Brooklyn with her husband, two children, a cat, a part-time dog, three fish, and five coffee trees, and still sleeps with a stuffy, which is an incredible segue. Her latest book for Disney, Stuffed 2 Into Darkness, or is it just Into Darkness? I don't know. We'll ask her. Is a sequel to her great 2019 book, Stuffed, and follows Clark and his loyal stuffy companion, Foon, as they head back to Camp Ican, which is a name I love, to meet up with his friends CL and DA. The monsters haven't forgotten about the blow dealt to them last year in universe last year, and are planning a little something of their own called the Great Revenge Plan. Please welcome to the show Liz Broswell. Hi, Liz.
Hey.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty good. We talked off air. Yeah, we talked off air a little bit, so we can dispense with the pleasantries. But
no pleasantries.
Yes, I do want to say, I always like to say, just because our baseline is still the pandemic, I just want to say I hope you and your family and friends are safe and healthy during these times.
Yeah.
And if you haven't,
you
been
too.
Thank you very much. If you haven't been vaccinated yet, I hope you get there soon. I think
second shot next week. Woo!
Beats my zero, so that's pretty good. I don't know if you've heard, Canada's not doing so great in the vaccine department, but that's okay. I'm a shut-in anyways. I don't see or talk to anybody, mostly, you know, not in person. So I gotta say
my life has not changed a great deal. My personal life.
Yeah, I've said this before. Like, there's a few things I've taken a hit on. Like, I love going to conventions, but this hasn't really cramped my style that much, to be honest with you. So, but now it's scary because speaking of New York, my favorite convention is New York Comic Con, and
you like that better than the San Diego Comic Con.
I do. I like the layout a little better, and even though it's busy, it's not at like San Diego's nuts, right? I've never been at a standstill on the causeway in New York, whereas
I have actually.
Okay. I never have. So I like the up and down nature of it more for some reason. I don't know. And I think I just like New York better, to be honest with you. But yeah, I go a few times a year just for different reasons, and I love it. So it looks like they're going to try an in-person and virtual event this year, like a slash thing. So I don't know. I don't think I'm ready yet. I mean, having said that, I haven't been vaccinated once yet, but
yeah.
Where are you with all that? Are you ready? Is it time? Are you still a little?
You know what? I'm getting my second shot next week. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a hermit by occupation and mm-hmm. nature.
Right.
I'll be honest. I'm so sorry about the beeping. As we're talking about pandemic stuff, my kids are remote schooling.
Yeah, no worries.
And they're doing stuff like that. Even when the time comes to readjust and go outside, I think I'm going to have issues like mm-hmm. meeting yeah. with other people in a crowded area. Like, the comparisons are not exact, but like after September 11th, I had a hard time going, not to a psychotic degree, but going into a crowded area where I couldn't see the exits.
Right.
Right.
Like, yep. Yep.
It happened like a mile from where I was at that moment. And yeah. So I think, everything will be fine eventually, but it's going to be a little while.
I have to think you were not alone. That would have been most people in that situation for sure. Right. Especially being that close to it. It's, you know, I get anxiety in crowds too, which is, I know sounds counterintuitive because I just said how much I love conventions, but the thing with conventions is like, I'll go, you know, for the whole weekend, and at the longer I'm there, the more comfortable I feel. Right. Cause I think once you get the lay of the land, even though I've been to the same place so many times, that first day is still a bit of a panic for me, but, the longer it goes, the better I get. But, I don't know.
Oh my God. I am so sorry. I am so sorry about this. Hope you can edit that out.
I actually didn't even hear it, to be honest with you, but,
great.
Yeah.
Great.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm a little hesitant, but, it's such a place that I love. And, you know, the thought of never going to them ever again. I know that seems ridiculous, but.
Wait, when you say them, you mean conventions?
Conventions. Sorry. Yeah. So the thought of never attending convention, you know, would just break my heart. So it's at some point, you know, we always knew the transition was coming, right? So we're gonna have to just be brave. What were you like before the pandemic as far as like not so much the crowds, but you know, were you like a hand washer, like a crazy hand washer before?
I was a crazy hand washer before the pandemic. Yeah. It was so funny, the first moment where I thought something was going on was when I noticed people were washing their hands in public bathrooms as much as I was.
Right.
Like, hey, you're actually singing the alphabet in your I mean, when you have two kids in New York City,
yeah,
like they are petri dishes. They bring home every style of virus and bacteria that's trending that week in North Brooklyn. That I was a hand washer before that. Honestly, right before the pandemic, I was kind of getting into the idea of wearing masks on planes, because whenever I go to convention or whatever, I come back, I always get a cold, like, or something.
Well,
like,
we call it con crud, right? So yeah, we all get it. Yeah, for sure. And airports for sure. Yeah. Are the worst. I just read this funny thing actually about, they were saying, you know, they'd like to see vaccines distributed through drugstores and stuff like that. And then there's this doctor, they're saying, well, actually, that's like the worst place because that is the most germ. Like, you're actually walking into the fire at that point. So it was kind of a funny thing. But they're just set up to deliver vaccines better than most people. But, you know, he was just saying, he was just saying it's kind of an odd choice only because it is, there's so many germ, sick people go there, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, it's funny, because I'm thinking about like the vaccine center at Javits Center.
Right.
Like, even though there's a lot of people crowded in there, it's huge. It's incredibly well ventilated. I'm always freezing at New York Comic Con.
Which is another reason why I love it so much. Yeah. Because it's cool there. Yeah.
So you're right. It's probably a better place to get back. I got vaccinated in a high school.
Okay.
It's Brooklyn. So
great.
In a gym of a high school.
Yeah, right on. However they do it. But yeah, I agree. Like, just, you know, you got to have that room to, you know, create space and good HVAC system is key, obviously, too. Right. So anyways. All right. Well, glad to hear you got one. You got a second one coming, and everyone's been healthy and safe up to this point. So, and as far as, it's weird with authors too, right? Because, you know, you do so many in-person events normally, right? So it's kind of
the book, normally I'd be having like for Stuffed Into Darkness, I'd be having like an in-person release party, and I'd be going to bookstores and I'd be signing. And with the first book, I guess we should probably talk about the books at some point, but with the first book,
we will.
Some of the in-store events I did were super fun because besides the fiction part of the book, which is like telling the story, there are several nonfiction chapters devoted to like teaching kids how to make their own stuffies or teaching adults who are reading it how to make their own stuffies. And so I would have these really great like Word Word Jersey City. I'd go in with like a bag of like felt and stuff and we would all sit around making stuffies. And that's amazing. Is not happening right now.
No, so I know.
That's a serious bummer.
Yeah.
And one of the things about being a mid-grade writer, in my previous books and some of my other current books and actually some of my future books are young adult. And young adults, which approximately means 13 to 18, although in this day and age, it really means 13 to 30. I'm connecting directly with my readers through email or social feeds or, you know, whatever. Mid-graders do not interact with adults as well. They shouldn't way. Right. So it's only in in-store, in-person events where I get to actually talk to my readers of a younger age. And it's been a real bummer.
Yeah. I mean, it's hopefully they, just put a pin in it, but hopefully this fall, things get squared away enough that you can do those events and still, even though Stuffed or Into Darkness is coming out, soonish, certainly well before any fall events, maybe they can revisit it. You know what I mean? It's a bit of a do-over, I guess, is what I'm trying to say maybe, but, you have another book coming out in the fall, though, too. Just really quickly, too. One of the, like I said, I was, first introduced to your work through the Twisted Tale books, and actually, I just interviewed Jen Colanita a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, listen to the interview, and she just made the New York Times.
I know, I saw that. So cool. Yay. I loved Go to the Distance so much. And the thing is, I wasn't even a big Hercules guy before, or Meg person, I should say, but. Because that cartoon isn't one of my favorite Disney cartoons, but I absolutely adored Go the Distance. I thought it was so great.
That's great. That's
awesome. And we got a lot talking about a bunch of stuff, between you and you're lapping them at this point with seventh book coming out in the fall. Between you and you and Jen and Elizabeth Lim, you're really getting through these things. I assume your enthusiasm hasn't waned at all, has it? Or like, as long as you're game, as long as Disney wants you around, I assume you're game.
I'm game for it. Yeah. It is so much fun to be playing in that universe and playing in that playground. I have a kind of a long history of playing in other people's playgrounds. When I, before I became a full-time writer, I used to produce video games.
Right.
And I did a lot of like Star Trek and Farscape, and just being allowed to play in the Disney playground is amazing. And yes, as long as they'll have me, I'm game for it.
What I asked her the sort of the same question, what hasn't been done yet that you've really got your eye on, unless it's something that you are already working on and you can't talk about?
I don't think my voice is the right one to tell the story, but I'd really like to see a young adult version of The Lion King. There's a lot that could be done there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really like to read that book.
Because your next one definitely. Is What Once Was Mine.
Which is Tangled.
Yep. Comes out in September. One of the things sort of I like, I'm really enjoying, I know it's sort of a what if premise, but I lump it all in with this current trend of like this Disney revisionist trend that's been happening the last few years, which I am so behind. I love it. I love it when, like the generations following, the original releases get take a crack at it. You know what I mean?
Because
the themes are universal. So they're supposed to be anyways. And because these films are made in, they exist, they're made in the time in which they exist. So, there's certain influences and certain, they reflect, certain things about, again, the world at the time. So I love it when, we get these revisionist ideas on classics, whether it's Disney or whatever. What's your viewpoint on stuff like that? Like, are you a Disney purist? Obviously not. You can't be too much of a purist because you're, part of a series that doesn't necessarily change the classics, but, updates them in a way, I guess, maybe.
I look at a lot of the characters and the princesses as they're portrayed as almost like blank slates.
Yeah.
Like in my book, Once Upon a Dream, which is a retelling of Sleeping Beauty, there's a lot of room for deciding what kind of person Aurora is because of the way she's portrayed on the screen, which mm-hmm. is beautiful. And it's done like a, you know, a 14th century tapestry, and it's a gorgeous film. But she could, you know, you could imagine a lot more going on under the surface of the line of the song she's given.
Sure.
So it's one of the trickiest things about writing Twisted Tales is navigating keeping a character true as he or she is portrayed in the movies, mm-hmm. while also exploring things of a more complicated and depthy nature.
It feels, I'm getting so much joy from it because, you know, I love your As Old As Time. I don't know if you've ever read Emma Thurl's Rebel Rose, you know, another Beauty and the Beast.
I haven't read that one, but I've read a bunch of like Beauty and the Beast retellings.
Right. And I like these all mostly better than the original story. You know, I love your As Old As Time so much. I love, you know, the focus, you switch the focus and take us back a little bit. And, you know, I really love this idea that, you know, you could, like, to your point, grab this sort of this base, you know, expand on it in such a great and wonderful way. Is there any pressure on you not to go too far, or does Disney sort of say, I mean, obviously they get final approval.
There are some basic, you know, no alcohol, no smoking, no drugs. So in that sense, these books are what's known as in the industry as clean teen. Mm-hmm. But I push it as far as I can. And sometimes my editor is like, the violence was a little overboard in, the first book that I wrote, Whole New World. So we've sort of pulled it back since then.
Sure.
But otherwise, they let me go. They let me have a pretty, pretty, pretty broad playground to play in.
Yeah, and you've gone all over the map. Yeah, like, I mean, that, you know, you just mentioned the Whole New World, that was Aladdin. And, we've talked about Beauty and the Beast. You've had Little Mermaid, Peter Pan, and Tangled's coming up in September. You really seem to enjoy the entire library. I do. Like, is there anything that they came to you and said, geez, we really want you to do this? You'd be like, nah.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, good answer. Not yet. Yeah, okay.
You know, there are probably, there are probably areas I would shy away from. Like I said, I don't think my voice is the right one to tell a Lion King.
Right.
So far.
I think Jen mentioned Tarzan. I think she said she'd love to do a Tarzan.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, I think that's one.
That would be really interesting from, like, because, you know, I'm a, like in some ways, Alice in Wonderland on birthday was a great one to do because I'm a huge original Alice in Wonderland fan, and I'm a fan of the film.
Right.
And so in that case, like, you know, man, I love Lord of Greystoke. So it'd be very interesting to do, like, you know, a multi-leveled Disney and the original, and like in my Alice in Wonderland on birthday, there are little hints and peaks and homages to the original books. I would love to do that with Tarzan as well. That'd be super fun.
Yeah. It just doesn't seem to end, does it? it's like, you know, when you sit down and think about what could be left, and then you start thinking about what's left, and you're like, oh my God, there's so much.
There's a lot.
Yeah. There's so much. Anyways, yeah, so well, once mine comes out in September, that's a long way away, but I just wanted to mention that before we, because
sure.
I am a fan of the series, and we'll look forward to that coming out in the fall. And if anyone doesn't know the Tangled premise, I guess, just look it up. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, okay, the twist is that her mom
What's
drinks
the twist? Yeah, tell me the twist.
The twist is that her mom drinks the infusion made from the blossom of the moondrop flower, not the sundrop flower, which imparts a whole bunch of different powers to our hero. Oh. And also I tell the story sort of Princess Bride style between a brother and a sister in a hospital room as the sister is getting chemo. She lives, still happy, but that's
just gonna say still. Like bummer. Yeah. All right, so that will that sounds really cool. I can't wait. And that does sound, that's the other thing too, and that's why I mentioned to Jen, especially about her Go the Distance, was like there's this really great, just strong emotional, you know, aspect to these books, which are really resonant and like, which, you know, especially, and you almost have to do that, don't you, to switch it up a little bit? Because one thing Disney doesn't do very well is like the day after isn't something they necessarily like to talk about. It's right, because they don't want to. I always compare it to The Graduate, you know, when they're on the bus at the end after they've broken up the wedding.
Oh, it's for like, sure. It's that like, is, it's that like, is an amazing metaphor. Like, now yeah. What?
Oh,
like,
shit. Yeah, what have we done? What have we done? So Disney gives this happily, this idea of happily ever after, right? So it's, you know, when you guys inject, you know, are able to inject like a real world emotionally resonant, you know, part to these stories, I'm behind it 100%. And
tackling with the thorny idea of an 18-year-old or a 16-year-old finding the love for the rest of her life. That's a complicated idea in this game.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So, and listen, if you can reach me, a black-hearted 40-year-old white guy, then, you know, you've done your job. You've done your job. All right. So what are we calling this thing? So the book says, the cover, which I'm holding, which I love, it's called Stuffed Into Darkness. So we're just calling, that's what it's called, obviously. It's on the book. You know,
it's funny that you bring it up, because I've been calling it Stuffed Too Into Darkness.
Okay.
I think it's actually, if you look it up, like if you look up its ISBN, it's just called Into Darkness. But I think of it as Stuffed Too Into Darkness.
Understood.
Kind of being a fan of like Alien as being the best horror movie ever made, and Aliens as being the best action science fiction movie ever made. I'm kind of looking at it that way.
Okay. I don't disagree with that, what you just said. So let me look, very quick story. My brother and I were reaching the age, you know, I'm 45, born in 1976. And I'm a huge cinephile, and so was my dad. So my brother and I were reaching the age where we could start going to the movies by ourselves. Like, we would get dropped off or take the bus or whatever. And we were going to see Aliens. And my dad, you know, may he rest in peace, and to his ever-loving genius, said, wait, you kids haven't seen Alien yet, have you? And we're like, no, what the hell is Alien? He's like, sit down. So he goes, sit down. You're not going to see Aliens until you see Alien. And we're kids at this point. And
how old were you?
I'd have to look it up now. When was Aliens? 86, 87? Or was it later than that or sooner?
No, I think that's about right.
Yeah. So
maybe a little later. I don't know.
So I'd be like 10 or 11 or whatever. So, you know, this respect for, you know, making sure you know the source material, right? Was always in us. So, really loved, because of that, I'm with you. Alien and Aliens is up there for me too. I'm such a huge fan of those films. All right, so Stuffed 2 Into Darkness.
Okay, so the first book. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the summary is really long, so yeah. I don't want to read it. It's too long. Yeah.
The premise of the universe, or the first book, is that monsters are real, and your stuffed animals really do protect you from them at night, which comes from the fact that, of course, monsters are really real. And when I was a kid, I used to sleep with my stuffed animals like on either side of me, carefully lined up in order from, like, let's say strongest to weakest, facing away from me, so that they could see the monsters when they came.
Sure.
So Stuffed is about, the first book is about Clark, who is kind of a sensitive little kid whose father might be going through some stuff, and his house is haunted by this terrible monster. And the book is told from two points of view, from Clark's and from his stuffed animal Foon, who his grandmother makes for him. To get all the mid-grade side, it's about Clark and alternatively his stuffed animal fighting monsters of the dark to save the house and save the day. And from a adult literary standpoint, Foon goes through the journey of the hero. And we watch Foon, like, you know, cross the threshold and do all those Campbellian things. And at the end of it, everyone is saved. So you could read it as a child and be like, wow, this is about how stuffed animals fight monsters, which is totally true. Or you can read it as an adult and be like, this also resonates, because it's about whether or not monsters is real. It's about monsters of the mind and monsters of the pathos. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's the idea, right? Where you play with, you know, a lot of metaphors, obviously, you know, there's two worlds are in parallel with each other and they're both experiencing things at the same time that, you know, both help them achieve great, you know, character arcs, obviously. You know, this idea too that we can talk about Stuffed. I think it's been out long enough now. So, you know, this monsters have invaded this house and have attached themselves to Clark's dad, and you know, he's experiencing, you know, sort of bouts of depression and other types of things. And, you know, this obviously is casting a shadow over the entire house. So they both have to, you know, fight these battles in their own way. One of the great things I love about it is exactly what you said, is that this works on different levels, right? This isn't, you can look, like you said, you can look at it from a child's perspective, or you can look at it from adult's perspective. You know, the monsters might change from, you know, something hanging on a doorknob to mortgages, whatever, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Banks, you know what I mean? Like, whatever, you know, whatever your thing is, or in this case too, you know, with Clark's dad and other things going on, you know, cancer, right?
Yes, grandmother
has
cancer.
Yep, mental illness a bit. Talking about depression. So, like, that's what I loved about this book, the first one, and we'll talk about the second one. You don't show, like, the, you know, the real world, you know, aesthetic that's going on is so great. And I think, you know, maybe I won't speak for kids, middle grade kids reading this book, but as an adult, if you're, you know, reading these books and you're reading Foon's side of the story, you know, to miss the obvious, you know, lessons and metaphors, you'd have to be hit over the head with a brick or something. But you know what I mean? I think they're very upfront, and I think they're very clever, Liz, very clever. Aww, and I absolutely fucking adored Foon's adventures and the way the language you use. And, you know, I actually, you know, found myself more attached to Foon's adventures than I did to Clark's and the real world stuff, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're cooler and funner.
They're cooler, yeah, for sure. But, you know, and maybe it's a case of where, like, you know, I deal with real world stuff all the time. I, you know, let's see what Foon's up to, right? So,
yeah.
Anyways, so in the end, Foon, even though he's a rookie, he's able to elevate his score by, you know, conquering the monster in the house and saving the Clark and his family in a wonderful way. So
it's interesting that you use the word score, because this book has been developing over 20 years.
Right.
And when I first conceived of the idea, it was as a video game back when I was a video game producer.
Right.
Where
be a great video game.
Yeah, well, there was a trend at the time, which I really loved, of where you would play, you'd have like a team of characters. This is like a long time ago for younger listeners.
For you kids out
there. Yeah, you could switch between characters within a team. And I imagined this team of like stuffed animals and you were trying to save your boy. Mm. So yeah, he does absolutely increases what we call monster protection factor.
Right.
Throughout the course of the book.
He does. And he does great stuff. And I love, you know, and so then, you know, that book comes out. That was 2019, I believe. Was the second book always the idea, or just the
sort of... I always conceived this as a series. I had a bunch of different ideas for a second book. This is the idea that appealed most to my editor. Mm-hmm. So this is the one we went with. So Into Darkness, it's like a year later.
Yep.
And one of the main settings in the first book is Camp I Can. Clark gets sent to this.
Which I love, Camp I Can. And it would like, I love the name. It's such a, it make like when you read the story and you get it, it's funny. It's one of those like Simpsons story, like there's a great,
oh my god, there's it's a great self-esteem camp,
right? Or like just playing with names, like like Simpsons has a store, the Try and Save,
right? Right. Or yeah, like, exactly, yeah, yeah, the Try and Save. Yeah, okay, exactly. But actually it's based on a number of real camps.
Okay.
So let me
I never went to camp, so yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, I really wanted to go camping. I used to read like the Girl Scouts camping handbook over and over again, even though I wasn't part of Girl Scouts because it kind of sucked in my town.
Right.
And my father felt bad because he used to take my 9-year older brother camping, and he was like, you know. And so he very carefully researched it. He was a professor at the University of Connecticut, and he like researched it the way a professor would, and he found a camp for me and my younger sister to go to that would do camping. And the moment I got there, I realized, even though I was like young, that it was an Outward Bound style camp for juvenile delinquents. It did have camping, but it was also all about like literally the girl I shared a tent with had been in and out of juvie a bunch of times. So Camp by Cam is based kind of like on the, yeah, you can do it. Yeah. Like the whole, it was a great experience, but it was like, oh my God, Dad, you couldn't catch the signals from
you're right.
The,
I, you're right. From the how was, you're like, how was it? Oh, I learned archery, how to pick locks. It was great. All great things you need to know. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's a year later, and so you sort of move. Even though you know, Clark goes to camp in the first book, he's only there for a short period of time.
Yeah,
and he doesn't want to go, but by the second book,
he desperately wants to go back because that's where all his friends are going.
He's made some great friends, and
look, a little Easter egg for adult readers at home. All of his friends, and even Clark himself, are named after old horror writers. So if you want to
Are we allowed to say his name? Because it's
not
it's,
that guy, not we cannot say that guy. That guy is not referred to.
Understood. But no, Clark, I know the names, right? And the names are yes, yes.
So
let's just, you know what, I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay.
But let's save that for the reader, see if they can, because that's okay. That's a fun game, because I only picked up one, actually.
Well, I'm going to give away one because it's okay. A girl and she doesn't get enough credit.
Right.
His best friend, C.L., is based on C.L. Moore.
Right.
Catherine Lucille is C.L. Moore, who was a great American female horror writer at the turn of the last century.
You know, so I don't remember now which one. I did pick up on one, and I thought, well, that can't be a coincidence. So I had to look up the rest. So I didn't, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, I picked them all out. I didn't. I got one, and then I did some research. So... But that was a really fun thing for me, getting to look that up. So to the readers up there, yeah, like that's a fun little sort of side game, a side quest, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah, and I should also add that like I was like, one of my fun things is to put in a lot of words that were used by horror writers.
Yeah.
My editor would be like, Benthic, really? Gibbous, really? And I'd be like, dude, kids can look it up, man.
Yeah, they have, kids are pretty smart these days. They've got the internet too.
Alexa, what does gibbous mean?
Right, exactly. I will say too, also, we talked a bit before, you know, appreciate your Star Wars game. The Force is strong with you, so that's good. I mentioned Star Wars a few times, thanks to Clark's friend,
Jalen.
And I guess if we were to, you know, follow these kids in, you know, a few more years, I could see a little, there's sparks there, I think, in Clark and Jalen. They like each other, I think, for sure.
Yeah, they do.
But anyways, yeah, so this book picks up a year later, and the whole thing.
So he goes to camp happily, but then it turns out that the monsters, Foon defeats like this big bad boss guy in the previous book. And in the world of the world of darkness where the monsters live, they're plotting their revenge. They want to plan their revenge against Foon, and it's focused on this camp. And the monsters are trying to find Foon and his boy and get to him through this camp.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say there's kind of a trap set in a way, I guess we'll call it.
There is a trap set.
Yeah, yeah. It's called the Great Revenge Plan. The Pletikon's amazing.
Not that smart, those monsters.
I love Pletikon. Like, he's so funny, and I love the way, like, it's that classic frustrated leader. He's surrounded by idiots, right, who keep, but they keep correcting him on the language he uses, right, specifically.
Yeah,
it's so, I laughed out loud a bunch of times. It's so funny. One of the great things I loved about Stuffed 2, I'm calling it Stuffed 2, I don't care.
Sure, go ahead.
Is the way it starts. I love that you sort of bring us up to speed quickly, and then you realize that this whole year Foon has been, the battle didn't end, right, with the one with Stuffed. And so Foon's been going on all these, it's almost like, it's so cinematic. It's almost like he's going on these little missions, these cleanup missions to like snuff out any local, monster activity in the area. It's almost, I love the way you immediately get us back into this world in a very clever way. And I thought that was really, really smart and really well done.
Oh, thank you.
Stuffed, you know, is more of a, it's a more of an adventure book than the first one in a way, which sounds weird because there is a lot, there is some, you know, adventure of course in the first one, but you know, I assume that's because you're aging with your cast. Is that the idea? So like, as you know, because a year at that age is a big deal, right? A year to me now is just a blur, right? At my age. But at that age for Clark and them, a year is a big deal. Like, we're, you know, puberty, all these sorts of things that are going on. You're changing levels at school, changing schools entirely. You know, is that, was that the sort of the idea that you just want to up the game, up the adventure because the kids are just, they're aging.
They are aging. Yeah. No, I, long before that fantasy series, which you're also not really allowed to mention, I always wanted to do a fantasy series where you age, where the characters age with the readers, but also, as I mentioned, I can't remember because we were talking about this before the recording or not. This is just like a different book. This is the action book,
right?
Like the first book is like a more of a, you know, thought piece, and this is more like we get into it with the bad guys and we see what the bad guys' world is like. We bring it to them. Both of those things, and the growing with the reader thing is actually less about the action and more about Clark's growing complicated relationships with his best friends.
Right, which he does. He has a tough go this round with some of his friends, and part of the reason
one of his friends stops, like, sort of not believing in stuffed animals, but like stops playing with them.
Let's be honest, he stops being cool. All right, he's not cool anymore.
In his world, he feels he's being cooler.
I understand. So it's a good segue because he's got some influencers in this book. Obviously, it's a new book, a new story. So a lot of times that brings with a new cast of characters. You've got some great, great new characters in this book. Chris is one of them. He's got a bad attitude, that guy, and sort of that sort of rubs off a little bit on some of the other campers. He's a really great character in this book, I thought. He's pushing against this notion of, you know, growing up or growing up too soon or growing up, you know what I mean? And I thought he's a really great balance. He brought a lot of great balance in this book against the kids. But my favorite new character is Maya.
Oh my God, I love her. Yeah. I had so much fun writing her. I had to cut chapters that were basically just her.
Oh no. Okay. So she's fire instructor skills Maya, but I'll let you sort of like tell us who Maya is.
So Maya is she's an older teenager. She's a counselor at camp, and I mean, I don't know how many kids listen to your podcast, but she's a little bit of a pyro, not in a bad way.
Right.
She likes fire a lot. She doesn't like random things on fire, but she really likes fire.
She respects fire. She respects fire.
She's actually in her, you know, Clark kind of fall, like, not a romantic sense, but he falls a little bit in love with her because she's the most safe adult style character in this book because she's not at all taken in by the monsters. She's not at all taken in by bullies. She's a little crazy because she likes fire so much. She's always talking about how great fire is and fire has shadows. And in fact,
my editor
and I had like some long talks about like the use of fire in this book. I grew up in the country where it was not abnormal in the 80s to like take hairspray and do interesting things with it. So we talked about a way of like
the 80s. I think I did that not long ago with paint. It probably was with paint or something, but I feel like
take hairspray and like write your name out on a parking lot and like light on fire. Like, super cool.
Yeah.
So Maya's kind of the embodiment of that, but she's a good person in her own way. She's a very safe person, and she is sort of the key to Clark helping to defeat the monsters by the end of the book.
She's great. And she's nuts in a great way. And I don't mean, you know, mentally ill. I mean, like,
she's
wonderful and zany and weird and all those great things that you love.
She's got a built-in BS detector. She can
absolutely. And ends up being, you know, the most accountable one right at the end of the day, which is important when things are falling apart. Yeah. One of the great things I loved about this book was Foon's growth is incredible in this book. as a, you know, as a stuffy, as a person, as a, as a, as a living, you know, breathing
selfhood,
right? As a self. Yeah. He learns a lot about respecting women in this book, which I really appreciated.
He also learns about like teamwork, which like the first book is all about him being like the hero by himself. He was the Han Solo, Captain Kirk, whatever like dated reference you want to make. But in this book, he realizes you can't fight every fight alone.
Right. My favorite parts of this book, and probably both books, is Foon's mission into Dark City with Flebish. And then Freya joins them eventually too. Like chef's kiss, that stuff. Like that's a film. That's a movie. Like that's a movie. That's a great cinematic. These are great cinematic moments.
I was so sad at how much I had to cut out.
Oh,
like,
really?
I realized it was very self-indulgent, but I had so many extra stuff of just like, of just Foon and Flebish. It was an on the road movie with the two of them.
Well, like. it's like it's Sam and Frodo and
yes,
you know, or, like with
Jamie and Bronn from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, right. Like it's in this classic sense. Like it's so literary and beautiful. Like and the dialogue is amazing. The exchange is great, right? Because you have these three strong personalities and, you know, all are, have, you know, have different ideas of how their worlds work and or how they're supposed to work. And then the character growth is incredible in those scenes because, I mean, Foon is different when he comes back from that mission. Right. And that's, it's not just because of Freya, it's a lot of it because of Flebish and how, you know, he changes his point of view and he understands that even monsters aren't a monolith necessarily. And I don't want to say too much, but.
So just to make it a little clearer for listeners. So Foon travels into the world of darkness, the monster's world, which is just a pit. It is a very thinly disguised metaphor for hell or.
Hades.
Or whatever. Really not, or, you know, underworld. Maybe Staten Island. Hard to say. Anyway.
No offense to the fine people. No offense to the fine people.
No offense to the fine people. Dutch kills. But so he basically captures what turns out to be a harmless monster called a Flebish to guide him to help save his boy. And the Flebish, as we find out over the course of the book, he kind of looks like an axolotl. He's got six arms and legs. The older part of this book deals with the fact that he's not really an evil monster. Right. Flebish are the terrible monsters who are responsible for stealing one of your socks or that SD card that you really needed or, you know, just like the
pen cap, the pen cap.
Yeah, exactly. The pen cap. Do we even use pens anymore?
I do all the time, actually.
Yeah, I do too. But like,
the kids don't. Yeah, no.
Yeah, exactly. Like the, maybe the escape key off your computer. I don't know.
Right.
But over the course of the book, Foon has to, you know, as this Flebish is leading him through the desert, he realizes this monster doesn't eat kids. He doesn't really have a desire to wreak harm or even live in our world. So what does that make him?
Right.
And so Foon has been so black and white, good and evil, light and dark. He's got to think about this.
Foon's great too, because he's really great at learning lessons, I think. Right. Like
it takes a while. But
sure.
He will.
Right. Right. But he commits to it. And you know that once he's learned that lesson, you know, he's like, because he prides himself so much on his hard work and you know what I mean? And his achievements that you just know, like once he learns it, that you know, that's going to stick with him. So it's really great watching him sort that stuff out and then arrive at the end, right at the conclusion. And then you're like, okay, that's, you know, that's going to be part of his character set now.
Yeah.
So this book ends, you know, again, once it, you know, it's sort of, there's some vanquishing going on for sure, but there's definitely a couple, you've definitely left, you know, some options, you know what I mean? There's a couple of easy ones. Once people read it, well, you know, as far as if there is going to be a stuffed three or not, I don't know if are you allowed to even discuss that or not, but
some degree.
Okay. Is there going to be a stuffed three? I guess we'll just start with that.
I can neither confirm or deny that, but you're right in that it would go in several different directions.
Yeah.
There's a couple things out there, including exploring, actually taking a break from Foon and Clark and exploring the monsters in relation to a different child.
Okay.
So there's that. There's a lot. I want to... there's another thing where the Clarks go on a family road trip.
Mm.
So it's like National Lampoon's Vacation, but with monsters. Because if you're going to find monsters, you're going to find them in a Best Western off of like Route 66 in the middle of nowhere.
Or Cousin Eddie's weird place. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, you know, there's someone's in university now. There's always options there.
Miskatonic University. Yeah.
Yes, which just, you know, there's the way that ends there. You know, there's a few options at least.
Yeah,
And even Pledicon. I mean, he what's the line? It's the Great Revenge Plan isn't over necessarily. It's even
revengier.
Revengier. Yeah. So. Because that's the thing, you know, like there is a resolution to this story, absolutely, and stuff too. But, you know, not all monsters are gone, right? There's still some monsters.
Not all monsters are gone. In fact, the lead monster is still there.
That's true.
Planning a revengier revenge plan.
That's right. So there's options there. Hopefully the folks, so everyone out there buy this book, and that will cement book three, and then go even further. The goal is to have as many stuffs. How would you say? How would you say that? I want as many Liz Broswell stuffings as a Twisted Tales.
That sounds a little. I'm not sure I like Liz Broswell stuffings.
I want as many stuffed books written by Liz Broswell.
Thank you.
As at Twisted Tales,
that written sounds
by
great.
Liz Broswell.
I would be thank very you. Happy about that.
All right.
Yes.
So, I don't know if this was by design or not, but Stuffed 2 comes out on Star Wars Day, May the 4th.
Really?
It does.
I thought it came out May 5th. Okay, May the 4th.
Am I wrong?
No. I mean, I'm sure you're right.
Let me look it up. Hold on. Now I'm concerned. May 4th.
Okay. All right, then.
May the 4th be with you. There you go. So there, that works out so well because, there is a couple.
That is perfect.
Because Clark is a huge Star Wars fan, and so is his friend Jay Lynn. They have a lot in common, and that's one of them.
And
so
is the writer.
So is the writer. That's right. And so is this podcaster. So it all works out. Anyways, everyone out there, May the 4th, when you're celebrating Star Wars Day, make sure you buy Stuffed Into Darkness. And then pick up Stuffed as well, if you haven't even read that yet. They're middle grade. They won't take you that long to read. So you could probably get through two in one day. That would be no problem for somebody who's got no kids like me and who's a shut-in. So I can just read and read and read. I am not a pandemic profiteer myself. Is there somewhere you'd like people to buy this book besides Scary Bald People?
I mean, you're local independent bookstore.
Any local place, okay. But is there any launch events planned or anything you've got going on?
There's virtual launch events. There's a virtual launch event on, I want to say May 7th, okay. Your mother, with K Books in Texas. It's really cute. They're doing a campfire, camp-themed
event. Oh, cool.
There's going to be another event next week with Books of Wonder. Virtually in New York.
Yep.
I'll be there with Jen Calanita.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, well, tell her I said hello.
I will, absolutely.
When is that?
And then.
When's that one?
Oh my God, I'm the worst.
I'll look it up.
It's like 2 days after I get my shot. So I hope.
And that's the Books of Wonder one, right?
Yeah, that's next Thursday. So whatever next Thursday is, I'm looking at that. And then I'm going to be doing a couple of Instagram Live or videos, kind of like as a counselor from Camp I Can, reading a book and showing people how to make lariats like what Jillian wears.
Awesome. Well, that sounds fun. I'm definitely going to tune into that Books of Wonder one. Be fun to see you and Jen.
Yeah, that's a great bookstore.
I've only been there once, and it was actually last New York Comic Con 2019. So.
Oh, so the cupcakes were still, they still had the cupcake shop then? Did they, was it still?
Oh, wait, didn't even notice that. I was there for, what was the event? I don't even remember what the event was. Didn't even notice the cupcakes. That was a couple of years ago, right? So
yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. God, it's been so long. That's what I mean. It'll feel like a whole new place. I can't wait. So everyone tune in, buy this book however you can. May 4th it comes out. Liz, I can't thank you enough. This was so much fun for me.
Thank you for having me. This is great. This is like one of the most fun interviews I've done in a long time. So
awesome. And yes, and don't forget September What Once Was Mine comes out. Awesome, A Twisted Tale, which they are all a lot of fun. I will say that, you know, I've got my favorites, but they're all really great. And I love this, these different takes on, you know, stuff, tales that we've known for so long, not even just the films, like people, so many people don't even, just, it's out of their people's minds that there's source material that goes back well before the films even, right? In some cases. So
absolutely.
Let's make sure we get people into those as well. Except for like the gross fucking racist stuff that there's any of that stuff that goes back.
I cannot comment on that, but understood. I can totally agree.
yeah. Understood. Thank you so much, Liz. Good luck with your second shot.
Thank you.
I'm going to tune in next Thursday. I'll try and get in with a dumb question so you know it's me. That's how you'll know it's me. You're like, man, that's all a really right. dumb question. That must be Steve. that'll be my tell. So thank you so much. And hey, listen, have a great weekend. There you have it, another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Liz for taking the time to chat with me. I had a lot of fun talking about Foon and Clark and all things Stuffies. Stuffed Into Darkness is out now, so pick up a copy wherever you buy your books and look for her next book in the A Twisted Tale series, What Once Was Mine, coming this September. As a reminder, it is Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, so support AAPI authors all month long, even all year long. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.